Time to talk about the big story from college sports with the recent Supreme Court ruling, the countdown to NIL, and more. Our guest is the founder, managing attorney at California Sports Lawyer. His resume is diverse, to say the least, an award-winning attorney. You can follow along on Twitter. Use the handle at Jeremy M. Evans, Esquire. Jeremy Evans, how is life treating you these days?
Oh, well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate being on with you, and life's good. Hey, weather's good. You know, can't complain, you know?
You know, I checked my records, and the last time you and I spoke was late February of 2020, and it was about the Astros scandal, the new NHL franchise in Seattle, and a few others. And so I was thinking, February 27th, 2020. So, Jeremy, anything much happened in the world since that conversation?
Not much. You know, I think everything's still the same. Yeah, right.
Amazing. Just sometimes the timing of life is incredible. So I want to get a little background for our listeners. You know, we talked once, it was a while ago. Just kind of curious, you know, where you're from, where you did your undergrad, law school, and how you came to create California Sports Lawyer, you know, and all the great stuff you do handling sports, entertainment, and media.
No, well, thanks, and I appreciate that. And I got to tell you, the radio shows I've been on, that's the first time I've been asked that question, so I appreciate it. And it's one of those things where, you know, I grew up in a small town, big family. I've got, you know, 8 brothers and sisters and 45 nephews and nieces at this point.
Whoa.
and growing. And it's a crazy thing, but I love it. Love being in a big family, and I haven't even got started yet in terms of having kids. So, you know, that number will grow, I'm sure. Maybe we can push over 50. We'll see. But you know, I grew up in a small town, and it was the first to go to college. And, you know, I was the youngest of 9, so I had a lot of examples to follow. And I was just like, hey, you know, I want to be a professional. I watched a ton of Law and Order episodes growing up. So I thought, well, maybe I'll be a lawyer. And turns out that I ended up not becoming a district attorney. But, you know, went to undergrad at UCLA, majored in political science, then made my way down to San Diego for law school, and then came back to Los Angeles and got master's of law and an MBA in entertainment media, sports law, and management from Pepperdine. And, you know, when I created California Sports Lawyer, I really kind of just sat down and I thought, what are, like, you know, what's important these days, and how do people find lawyers, and how do they find anything? And I thought, well, we kind of live in a Yelp world, a Google world. And I thought, well, what's the best way to find this? Find an attorney. And I thought, well, you know, what area do I want to practice in? Okay, the sports and entertainment. What's the search term, you know, in terms of finding a sports lawyer? And I thought, well, the search term is literally California Sports Lawyer. You know, if they were looking for a sports lawyer in California. And so luckily enough, in the history of mankind, nobody had trademarked it. And so I got it trademarked, and it's really worked out to be a great little thing. But it's also one of those things too, like, it's, as you know, it's all about relationships. It's about, so the brand name is great. But you know, it only goes so far as sort of what's behind the brand, and, you know, is there substance behind it? And so I try to focus more on that. And the brand is great. It's out there. It is what it is. And it's definitely helped. But that's kind of where we are today.
So safe to say, along with your older siblings, ADA Jack McCoy was your role model?
Absolutely.
So the ruling Monday from the Supreme Court, 9-0, allows for incremental increases for how college athletes can be compensated. So from what Justice Gorsuch wrote, the scope is focused on education-related benefits. Can you kind of, for people like me and a lot of the novices, elaborate on that as far as, in layman's terms, what that means?
Yeah, no, really good question. And what it really comes down to is, you know, I think the NIL stuff is related to the decision, but it's sort of a, I guess I'll kind of get into that. But the decision really is saying that a school can now compete. Schools can compete for student athletes, meaning that small school from, you know, Midtown USA can compete with, you know, big coastal school in one of the sort of larger states, right? And it basically would mean that, like, somebody, a school could come along and say, all right, we can increase our scholarship. And to me, I think it provides a better competitive balance, because then if a smaller school maybe, you know, doesn't have as much to offer in terms of, let's say, market or exposure, but they could say, but we can offer a better scholarship because they're not limited by the amounts by NCAA or whatever university rules because of this Supreme Court ruling, then I think it opens up some competition. But I think relatedly, it comes down to the NIL stuff as well, because the NIL stuff is going to move forward regardless of what the NCAA does. And when state law is basically allowing it to do, that means there's a conflict. And unless the NCAA, you know, refuses it or tries to litigate this, I think stuff's going to move forward there too. So even though the decision is unrelated to NIL, I think it's in the same ballpark, if you will.
Yeah, I would say under the same umbrella, as we continue with Jeremy Evans of California, sports lawyer. And then Justice Kavanaugh took, I would call it maybe a more severe line, basically told the NCAA they're not above the law. Their business model would be illegal in any other industry in this country. I mean, how should we fans and those who cover college sports interpret that? I mean, like I said, in maybe more severe language from Justice Kavanaugh.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's one of those interesting things, right, where you get this 9-0 decision. You know, you can't get more perfect than that in terms of, you know, there's nine justices. They all voted to affirm this or to affirm the, you know, lower court decision. But I think what Kavanaugh is really saying is that, you know, if we were asking this question 30 years ago, it would be a different story, because you wouldn't be talking about multi-million dollar brand partnerships and apparel partnerships with schools. You wouldn't be talking about millions and billions of dollars for money with regard to broadcast contracts. And you wouldn't be talking about conference realignment and all these things that have happened where, and, you know, paying coaches millions of dollars and having these millions of dollars of buyouts, because at that time, that stuff wasn't happening. And then when NCAA and universities introduced these things, it really became an unfair situation, because on one hand you're saying, oh, the schools can make this money and bring this revenue in, and athletes can't in turn sort of have the opportunity to be competed for or have options. And it's sort of like all this influx of information and money coming into the universities and the conferences and NCAA, but the other side, you're limiting the athletes both from the NBA and the NFL side when they say, you have to either go, you know, one and done for basketball or 3 years as a junior before you can enter the draft, which is something that's not talked about very much. And then, of course, then you're saying, okay, and then you can only offer a certain amount for a scholarship. So I think Kavanaugh is really looking at that and he's going, look, there's some ability to have, you know, for example, baseball has, you know, essentially an antitrust exemption. But they would not be able, the teams would not be able to go out and collude with each other and say, we can't offer X dollars above this for a free agent. You know, it would be one of those things where there's a limitation to an antitrust exemption. And the NCAA had some leeway there, but I think they basically abused the leeway, and I think that's what the judge was saying, or the justice was saying.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously, I think in the late 80s, the MLB owners were actually convicted of colluding and had to cough over, I think, about $250 million.
Right.
Anyway, be interesting to see where it goes next. A couple final thoughts for attorney Jeremy Evans of California Sports Lawyer. I saw some very interesting stories on your Twitter feed. A report about venture funding, a record first quarter here this year for raising money, and how all this dough is going into startups beneficial to sports sponsorship. So my first thought was hearkening back to all those dot-coms in the late 90s and early 2000s. So, Jeremy, why would this kind of venture funding be a boon to that end of the sports business?
Right. No, really good topic, and such an interesting thing that's occurring. I think part of it was COVID-related. People were looking to venture into these, pardon the pun, but venture into these sort of special purpose acquisition companies, which might as well be called sports purpose acquisition companies at this point. And it was an easier process than going through the stock market or traditional sort of IPO. So I think that was part of it. But I think also the thing with sports and the thing with entertainment is that it's ever growing. Like, it's never going to stop growing. There's always going to be opportunity. It may fluctuate. But I think ultimately, if you're an investor and you're looking at sports and you're going, okay, we have all these sports. We have a lot of people watching sports. We have new sports being introduced. We have college athletes looking at name, image, likeness opportunities. And then, of course, we have this college football playoff looking at adding 12 teams. We have, billion-dollar franchises that are being sold. And then, of course, you have this advent of streaming now, which is going to be the next big thing in sports, and basically moving away from your traditional broadcast television into streaming. And there's so many players that are moving in that space, Amazon and what have you, and Sinclair looking at adding a streaming service, right? So I think when you look as an investor, you look at that and you go, wow, that's a lot of opportunity. Now, that being said, to your point about the dot-coms, the SEC, Security and Exchange Commission, had actually come out with a report saying just because a celebrity gets behind a SPAC doesn't mean it's a good investment, And so there is obviously some truth to that, and people need to be careful about investing in those types of things. But between that and the wearables technology and the rise in women's sports, there's definitely some opportunity there.
You mentioned it in passing. It was the last thing I wanted to bring up as far as how fans ingest their sports. I mean, I know a lot of us have long sought, I guess you call it the a la carte option, specific to individual likes. And the story was from the New York Post, an effort to move away what they call the traditional multi-channel video programming distributors, I would assume like cable or satellite. Could you offer some clarity there? You mentioned Sinclair. What is it they're venturing into?
Yeah, no, really good question. This is something that is just such a big deal when it comes to what the future of sports consumption looks like. And, it's kind of like the Burger King have it your way type, type crowd, right? Where we're all so used to this now. It's like where you sit down and you're watching, your Netflix or your Amazon Prime, and it just makes too much sense to put this in one platform and to say, why not just stream this? Why do we have, broadcast partners? And, of course, this was part of the problem with the whole AT&T and Warner Brothers purchase, is that there were some issues there with how do you stream sports. And I don't think HBO at that time was looking to add sports to its platform. But it's sort of like the Disney model where you have the bundle of, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus. But Sinclair is basically, they have all of these stations that they essentially purchased from Disney via the Fox purchase when Fox sold its entertainment assets to Disney. And they're looking at this and they're saying, hey, how can we reach people? The cable model is declining. And so people are no longer very fast declining way subscribing to cable. And so I think Sinclair is just looking at this and saying, hey, this makes sense for us to do. This is where the consumers are at. We need to meet them where they're at.
Some really fascinating stuff. Folks, he's Jeremy Evans, kind enough to offer some insight and clarity into some important and not always easily interpreted issues. You can keep up on Twitter. Use the handle at Jeremy Evans Esquire. Actually, Jeremy M. Evans Esquire. The company handle is at CA Sports Lawyer. Jeremy, really great catching up. I really appreciate your time and information. Wishing you well, and obviously I look forward to talking again down the road.
No, thanks, Steve. Appreciate your time.
All right. Have a good one.